Hello, everyone, and welcome to Note to Scene, a music news podcast covering everything from pop punk to metalcore. I'm Matt Crane.
I'm Tyler Sharp.
And welcome to the show, ladies and gentlemen, where every week we discuss and debate all the biggest news stories in the music scene. Find more episodes of the show on Apple Podcasts, where you should please rate and review us. Email us at notetoscene@gmail.com. So much to talk about this week. We got big news from I Prevail and Panic at the Disco. But first, we're going to talk about My Chemical Romance, the Final Warp Tour, and whether or not we should stop trying to bring this band back to life. All right, let's go.
It was good, man. Saw a lot of family that I don't get to see very often, and ate a shit ton of food. Felt like crap afterwards, but it was totally worth it. How about you?
It's pretty terrible, man. Like, I mean, it was good. I enjoyed the experience, but you know, I did the typical ate way too much,
mm-hmm.
felt miserable afterwards, mm-hmm. and found myself saying, I'm never going to do this again, which I'm pretty sure I did last year. But for me, it was like a combo of you already overeat on Thanksgiving, and then mm-hmm. I was watching my team lose.
Ooh.
So you combine it with stress eating, like stress eating plus Thanksgiving eating, and mm-hmm. it was just, I ate way too much, and I felt like I wanted to die. So good times, though.
Good times.
Happy fucking holidays.
Right? Yeah, I felt your pain, man, all the way to Indiana, watching the end of that Lions game.
Yeah, man. All right, let's knock out some listener questions. We are still... Actually, first, quick shouts to 30 Seconds to Mars. Walk on Water is number one at Alt Radio.
Boom, dude. Still rolling.
Number one.
I think it's a hit.
It's number one. That is as definitive of a hit as you can get.
Mm-hmm.
I gotta admit, I didn't think they still had them. Still had it in them to get a song number one, you know, after
either.
The last album didn't do that.
Right. Shouts to sports, man.
Shouts to sports anthems. All right. Our first question comes in from listener Tyler H, who writes into notetoscene@gmail.com. Tyler says, what's up, guys? Tyler, aka the only hardcore kid that listens to Note to Scene, writing you guys again to ask a quick question. With all the bullshit and negativity that is punishing what's left of the scene, I think we are officially in the grievance and remembrance stage of the scene's life. It's time to start thinking about what to put in the obituary, starting with Warped Tour. What are your guys' favorite memories of Warped Tour throughout the years? Any groundbreaking performances or dramatic acts that we will be telling our kids and grandkids for years to come? I personally enjoy the documentaries that Warped Tour produced, especially No Room for Rock Stars. I'd really love to hear your input, as I think we all need help in this time of grief. Keep slaying the podcast, sending love all the way from Alberta, Canada. It's interesting you bring up the documentaries, Tyler, because mm-hmm. I actually really loved those as well.
Yes.
Especially Views ran this really cool one called like Warped Inside and Out. And it just sort of highlighted Kevin dealing with a bunch of the bands and a bunch of these growing bands on the tour. Watching bands like From First to Last rise on Warped Tour would probably be one of my favorite things. Just probably, I want to say 04 to 06, where you had this, like, it was with the invasion of the emo bands to Warped Tour. It was
mm-hmm.
probably my favorite memory of Warped Tour, where there was a real tension of emo versus punk. You had a lot of these older punk bands, veterans of Warped Tour, like NoFX and Pennywise, you know, fighting bands like My Chemical Romance and Under Oath.
Mm-hmm.
You know, they were just like not about this new emo bullshit. And it was so much fun to watch, just, you know, sort of seeing it was like my music was taking over Warped Tour, and it was like, get out of here, old guys, you know?
Right.
And at the time, I just specifically always go back to like From First to Last, watching them, you know, sort of blow up in 04, you know, playing the small stage, and then getting to see them play main stage in 06 with Sonny, you know, before they eventually dropped off. But, you know, they were a true main stage band at that point. Like, you just see the crowds they were playing to in 06. Just seeing Sonny Moore up there slaying it was so great. Another thing I just think of on a smaller scale is Bless the Falls 2007 Warped Tour run. It's
Nice.
just, it blows my mind. Anytime I go back and revisit it, because that band literally is the definition of blew up on Warped. They were the buzz band of that year. Their crowds were insane. Craig Mabbott was going nuts, climbing, jumping off everything. It was insane. He was walking, doing crowd walking, jumping off giant speakers. The band really got a reputation on Warped Tour that year, and it like really made them. As far as my favorite performances I've ever seen, probably Silverstein and Chiodos will go down as my top performances. How about you,
Nice.
T-Sharp?
It's tough because, like I said on our Warped Tour episode, I didn't go to my first Warped Tour until 2013, so my memories are pretty recent. But as far as overall, the thing I look back on Warped Tour on most highly is just how Under Oath rose thanks to that tour. They were
Right.
just when they released "They're Only Chasing Safety" in 2004, they were on the tour that summer, and the amount of copies of that album that they were selling day to day was absolutely ridiculous. And they really owe Warped Tour a lot as far as how that band blew up in the way that they did. And hundreds of other bands do as well.
They did it with when Dallas was still in the band once, didn't they? Like a small run, I think.
Yeah, it was right when. So there, it was 2003, and I can't remember exactly who was on it at that time, but it was either the very end of Dallas or the very beginning of Spencer. But there are videos of it on YouTube, and that's how I lived it through. Just going back and watching old interviews and living that time vicariously through the internet. The internet could be a really good place for stuff like that. But as far as things that I got to witness, 2013, watching Bring Me the Horizon so far away that I couldn't even see the stage, it just felt like it mattered so much back then. I literally couldn't even see the stage. I was probably 2 football fields back, and the crowd was just. It was the biggest thing I'd ever seen at Warped Tour. And
Yeah.
it just felt good to know that it was so healthy at that point. 2014, I drove down to Indy with a really close friend of mine. Before I started working at AP, I worked at a Burger King, and this friend and I were just got super close, and her friend's band were opening on like they won a competition about all the bands, and then they played on this one stage. So we drove down there, hung out at Warped Tour all day. It was just exactly what I felt like Warped Tour was supposed to be growing up. And like my favorite bands that I saw that day were Terror and Close Your Eyes, and it just didn't even matter like what bands that I saw. I was just sharing it with someone that you care about. And it was, I just felt like that's what Warped Tour always should have been. And total shout outs to the documentaries. I wanted to bring that up on the Warped Tour episode, and we didn't get around to it, but I loved that No Room for Rockstars documentary. It talks about
So good.
Mitch Lucker, Chris Drew, Forever Came Calling, and Mike Posner, and just all those different angles of Warped Tour, and just seeing how the tour works behind the scenes and for bands out on the road. It's just a great insight. And if you haven't seen it, I highly recommend it.
If you have seen it, like the portrait that that documentary paints of Kevin is exactly how
Right.
Kevin is in real life. Like I
Yes.
just it really does Kevin justice.
Absolutely.
Our next question comes in from listener Chris Q. Chris says, "Matt and Tyler, big fan of the pod. Mostly the much appreciated snark mixed with legit critique." Thank you, Chris. "For context, I'm 38 and have already lived in full that emo metalcore dream you guys describe as the glory days. I think we call it the golden age. I need you now, though, to keep up on all the new stuff, even though we'd agree most of it unfortunately sucks. I wanted to write because the Lil Peep episode really resonated with me. A genuine thank you for articulating what made him great. Even for a semi-washed up dude like me, he instantly felt like a future we had been long waiting for. Of all the artists of the 2010s, I'd offer Grimes' Art Angels as the only other record that captured even close to that level of genre bending future. But yeah, I wish things were better. On a lighter note, when you guys talked supergroups the other week, nobody mentioned the new Tragic. Post from First to Last Phil and post Under Oath pre-Maylene Dallas? Nothing obvious came of this beyond a MySpace EP. But honorable mention, this was Drugs 8 years before Drugs. Keep up the good work." Okay, Chris. So first, I gotta stop. I gotta. The new Tragic is a special ongoing joke between me and Tyler, and has been for a long time. I like this band, Tyler. I don't know about you. I enjoy the songs, but Supergroup, we're going real far, I feel like, because this band, for those who don't know, was made up of Philip Reardon, who He was he sung for he wasn't even from First Last original singer. He only sang on their Aesthetic EP. And after the band kicked him out because he fucking sucked, he somehow roped Dallas, the original singer of Underoath, into this project. And you know, Dallas has denounced this project like in every which way, and Dallas even claims he never recorded vocals for it. He said he just like helped them out with promos and did pictures for them, which, you know, I guess pick and choose who you want to believe. But I don't know. I think is Supergroup a stretch here, Tyler Sharp?
I think in the context of 2005 when this happened, I think you can call it a supergroup.
Okay, but just, I mean, I remember when it happened and it wasn't a drugs level
right,
event.
Not
like,
at all.
This was a small thing. You had to look for it. I remember.
Looking back, we can call it a supergroup, but as it was happening, it was difficult to say because all these bands were still rising. Outside of From First to Last and Under Oath, there were members of Red Jumpsuit Apparatus and Cute Is What We Aim For involved
in this
project.
Oh, yeah, and the guy, I think his name's like Mark Webb, he went to found that band It's Alive, who got like a major label deal.
Yep.
Yeah, so there was a lot of shit going. I guess, yeah, it's a posthumous supergroup. But
sure.
At the time, you know, like Phil wasn't this massive star, and Dallas says he wasn't even really in the band. So
I know. I could do an entire podcast about
that,
the new
that
Tragic.
We are doing the new Tragic podcast. Thank you so much, Chris, for bringing this up. I never thought we'd get to talk about the new Tragic on Note to Scene.
So I won't drag this out too far because I totally could, but I'll try and keep it as short as possible.
We're doing a whole show at some point
right,
on this band.
Right. We, I got. After we recorded that episode where we talked about the supergroups, after we were done recording, I told Matt I was literally planning on doing the new Tragic as my band. But due to what Dallas has been through over the last year, he was in a tragic accident that nearly took his life. Like, he was literally
Dallas. He, like, best recovery
to
Dallas,
man.
Everybody,
right?
Give Dallas your wishes.
He was literally pronounced dead at the scene. And I remember I was still at AP at the time and running that story in the middle of the night and going on Facebook and seeing his brother posting that it doesn't look like Dallas is going to make it. That was kind of like my little peep moment. If you guys listened to our bonus episode last week, and it just Dallas's impact on my life. And not only that, just the music scene as a whole, it cannot be understated. Like if it isn't for Dallas, we don't get Under Oath. And if we don't get Under Oath, imagine how many bands we don't have without him.
So, but, you know that Dallas is not proud of this work, and that's why you didn't bring it up.
Absolutely.
It's not a good time for Dallas. And
right.
Why?
I just wanted to respect him and his wishes to kind of bury this thing, because it was basically Phil. So the new Tragic released three songs, Half Cock Smile and Two Guns Blazing. They Don't Make Hallmark Cards for Moments Like This and You're So Jazz Face. They made a video for Half Cock Smile, and Phil allegedly tricked Dallas into an unbecoming situation, and Phil told Dallas that it wouldn't be used in the music video, and it was used anyways. And
what's funny about the video is it's a very rock star looking video. Like Dallas is wearing sunglasses and like a suit jacket, and like he's got strippers on him, and he just looks like Dallas looks like a rock radio bro all the way in this video. You know what I mean?
It's just not Dallas.
Very funny look. It's not Dallas. And if you didn't know it was Dallas, you'd be like, who's that tool in this video? Like, he actually looks like a douche.
Right. So we have these three songs, and I'm not going to get too deep into it because I want to keep my Under Oath secrets for a little while longer, as long as I can. But these three songs take from what Dallas was writing as the follow-up to The Changing of Times when he was still in Under Oath.
Yeah.
So there are a lot of similarities between these songs and They're Only Chasing Safety, which is why they always get called Diet, They're Only Chasing Safety. So in the song They Don't Make Hallmark Cards, in the bridge, whoever's screaming it, it's either Phil, it's either Dallas, we don't know at this point, they scream, looking past the bright lights, can you see me now? Under Oath's Reinventing Your Exit's original title was called Look Past the Bright Lights. And before that, it was called Heather Breed. But it was originally called Look Past the Bright Lights. And that was the chorus hook that Aaron would sing. He'd sing Look Past the Bright Lights. And You're So Jazz Face, which was kind of like the outro song that the new Tragic release, it's just a blatant rip of Some Will Seek Forgiveness, Others Escape, the closing track off of They're Only Chasing Safety. And I just want to close this talk real quick with quite possibly my favorite tweet of all time. On April 8th, 2009, Mikey Way from My Chemical Romance tweeted at Phil and said, "Holy shit, it's Filthy Phil. How the fuck are you living?"
So Phil, after he left From First to Last, or he was kicked out, he very clearly wanted to make this Under Oath ripoff. You know, it was a more post-hardcore pop-friendly version of Under Oath was all he was really trying to do. And then he went on to, like, name himself Phil Gorgeous, and he became a rapper for a while. And the dude has just been all over the place. At one point, he was hitting on one of my ex-girlfriends, and I saw it on Facebook. And shouts to Jane, but I totally just blew up the comments and was, like, laughing at him, and I started dropping new tragic videos in the comments. The dude has just been around, and we're going overboard.
Gotta go, man. Shouts to Maylene and the Sons of Disaster.
Okay, yeah, and shouts to Dallas with his recovery, which looks to be going decent.
He posted a video over the weekend, and he looked healthier, which is great to see.
We thank Tyler and Chris for writing in to notescene@gmail.com. If you have any questions, please feel free to send them that way. But we got to move on, Tyler, and hit our main story, which is My Chemical Romance.
did you ever think you'd be saying that?
No. Yes. I mean, you know.
Right.
You know how it goes with this band. But My Chemical Romance fans launched a petition for the band to play the final Warped Tour. This final Warped Tour we talked about last episode. You can go listen to. It's got 16,000 signatures. You know, it's kind of the big story of the week. And this is sort of the most recent and prominent of many attempts to resuscitate this band we've gone through. And it's just like kind of, at what point do we stop doing this, Tyler Sharp? Should we stop doing this? Does it matter? What feelings did this bring to you?
I think we should stop doing it because it doesn't matter. The problem is that My Chemical Romance are just never going to get back together. And I think people act like they owe us a reunion. They don't owe us shit. Like, they were a band, they did their thing, and their music exists. Like, why, you know, they're out doing what they actually want to do now. Gerard Way didn't even want to do My Chemical Romance after the Black Parade cycle. He was ready, he was done. He was like, we took over the world, it's time to end it. But thanks to major label agreements, contracts, all music industry bullshit, they made another album that I don't even know if those dudes like. I don't know if they like Danger Days. They probably do because no one else liked it.
No one else but Matt Crane.
Right.
Cassie Witt. Shouts to Cassie.
Shouts to Cassie. I do like a few songs off Danger Days. But it's just not going to happen. And I think it's fine to have these conversations and stuff, but it just doesn't matter. Like, we sign these petitions and we have these conversations. It feels like once every 4 or 5 months, like, let's get My Chemical Romance back together. Is My Chemical Romance ever going to get back together? From who I've talked to in their camp, it's never going to happen, ever, because they don't want to do it.
I've heard a few things, and okay. So I don't think the MCR reunion is as impossible as you and a lot of people think, but we'll get there. We're gonna have that conversation, Tyler, that you just mentioned. You know, even though it doesn't matter, it would be the coolest way for Warped Tour to go out.
Sure.
Can you think of a cooler way for Warped Tour to go out?
I mean, have Under Oath on it, but
realistically, for the tour, what band?
I mean,
you know,
they are the most beloved emo band of all time,
right? There's no, I mean, even if you got Fall Out Boy at this point, it's almost like they're too pop. You know, it'd be cool and people would do it, but it would be way more special, I think, if MCR headlined the final Warped Tour.
They're just synonymous with our world. That's why everyone associates it with Warped Tour and alternative press and this landscape.
I think they could also save Warped Tour. I mean, like, you know, we talked about how attendance was down to like 5,000 kids. If My Chemical Romance is doing Warped Tour, you know, you have 15,000, maybe even 20,000 kids coming to every show. And maybe the tour makes enough money that they stick around, you know, and maybe the bands opening, you know, this tour on the smaller stages get all that attention from all these MCR fans. And we get a little like kindling for the scene, a little spark to keep things alive again. I really think it's a possibility.
I love your optimism. I wish I had that.
I mean,
a shit ton of kids would show up. All ages.
A lot of kids.
all ages, man, from your age to my age to younger.
Because they have younger fans. They have a lot of younger, right? New fans who are discovering them every day.
They are arguably bigger in death than they were in existence.
That's tough.
It's tough, but they've ushered in a new era of fans without even existing.
Absolutely.
So
absolutely.
All these people would come out, and then when My Chemical Romance never acknowledged Warped Tour again, they all go away. It's a band-aid for My Chemical Romance to reunite for Warped Tour. This is supposed to be nostalgic. That's all it's for.
But my thing is, you cram all those kids into Warped Tour, they're gonna check out other bands, you know? And now all of a sudden, you know, maybe they see a Neck Deep. You know what I mean? Maybe they see a Pierce the Veil. You know what I mean? Maybe it could help fuel the scene in the way Warped Tour used to fuel the scene, when you had Bring Me opening, you know, in 2013, and all those kids went and checked out all the other smaller bands, and we had this really cool thing going on.
I just don't think the scene is like that anymore, because the music is just generally shit.
You think there's just not enough to offer?
I just don't. I think the basket is bare, man. We are scraping the bottom here. And if kids are going to come out for a My Chemical Romance reunion, they're going to see fucking, who knows, some pure noise band. And they're going to be like, God, remember 2006? Yeah, those were the good old days.
I mean, yeah, they're going to see Jewel Vera and I Prevail, and, like, you know, it's, you're right in that respect, that the scene doesn't have much to offer at this time. But here's the thing. I don't think this reunion is so impossible. Like, I'm starting to believe we will see it one day. You know, when these guys, when they start running low on money, things are going to change.
That's definitely when we see bands reunite, but I don't see it happening.
And here's my other thing. These guys, we have this thing with MyChem where we put them up in the sky as gods. Mm-hmm. These guys aren't like icons. They're not gods. You forget they're humans. These are people who participated in the music industry. They sold you a product and they took your money. They're just musicians. Like, they're not these otherworldly beings. You know, this band, it didn't end for these magical, grand, planned reasons. Like, this band ended because, from everything I've been able to gather, like, they weren't getting along. There were multiple members with substance issues. Their last album tanked. There were a ton of cooks in the kitchen trying to fix the band. The band was a hot mess. That's why the band ended. Mm-hmm. It wasn't working anymore, you know? And so that's my thing, is we have this fairy tale sort of bookending put on them that I don't think is really there. I think the reasons this band broke up are a lot realer than they appear. They broke up why most bands break up. And I think for that reason, they could get back together, the same reasons most bands get back together.
So do you think Gerard's just talking out of his ass when he said he wanted to end the band after the Black Parade?
But, you know, yeah, because, you know, we see him try to play his bullshit anytime he has a new comic book to sell. You know, all of a sudden it's, well, maybe when he's got a new comic book. We see Frank do it too, you know?
Yeah,
it's
they
a possibility.
All do it. They
and
all
then,
do it.
Then they say never. You know, they play the press cycle again, like any other band. These guys aren't special. Like, I know for some reason, it's even hard for me. Gerard Way and Frank Iero and Mikey Way are angels, you know? They're, like, literally angelic creatures. But when I think of them as just band dudes, I see them move like band dudes.
I just don't think they want to do it.
Yeah, I mean, maybe at the moment they don't. But
Gerard's got to deal with Netflix. Bob Breyer's living in the fucking woods. And
Bob Breyer's not coming back. That's been established.
It wouldn't be an official My Chemical Romance reunion, is what you're saying.
No, Bob Breyer's not. Nobody cares about Bob.
Nobody cares about
don't
Bob.
Don't at me on Bob Breyer fans. Do not at me on Twitter again. Let it go. But
go
yeah,
after
cares.
Him. Go after him. I'm sending the wolves after you, Matt.
I already dealt with the Bob Breyer. He doesn't matter. As long as it's Mikey Way, Gerard Way, Frank Iero, and Ray Toro, that's all anybody cares about.
You don't worry about the legacy of My Chemical Romance at all? Because you and I have talked about the Under Oath reunion and how if in the future they release new music and it doesn't live up to our standards of Under Oath, you told me you were worried about their legacy.
I absolutely am terrified for their legacy.
Would you be worried about the My Chemical Romance legacy? It's the issue that we face when bands make a comeback.
With
Good Charlotte.
Under Oath,
okay, go ahead.
It's
Matt.
Because I'm less confident. I don't
you
knowing
have
that
more
band.
More confidence in My Chemical Romance?
Than knowing Under Oath's fucking chaotic history and just how much that band has hated at each other and all of the fighting and all the infighting and all of the creative differences. And I just, like, to me, Under Oath, I have a lot less faith in them to execute. And MCR, I think if they come together as a unit, a sober unit, I think we've seen them make magic. And they've got a much bigger support system. You know, they've got a Warner Brothers Records right there at any minute, ready to give them the full push, you know? So it's just a different situation. They're at a spot, they're all at a spot in their lives where they can just kind of chill. You know, they don't have everything riding on it.
I think you could kind of, they're two completely different stories for sure, but My Chemical Romance was a hot fucking mess, man. Like, it was bad. Those dudes didn't want to be in a band together anymore. And Under Oath soldiered through it for years. My Chemical Romance just kind of called it quits.
I mean, there were a lot of factors to go along with it, you know, a failing album to be one of them, but it's been a long time. Yeah, and that's the thing is, like, these guys, like, weren't friends when they broke up, and now they're hanging out again. Like, it's like they took that necessary time away, and I think, you know, Frank and Gerard are hanging out. You know, we recently saw, like, all the members hang out at one show. I think the channels are opening up.
I just don't see it happening. I think Gerard is happy. He's happy in his little comic book world, and he's going to use My Chemical Romance whenever he feels like he needs to in interviews to push his whatever world he wants to get into, whether that's fucking weird 80s action cat hesitant alien solo shit or some graphic novel. They're just here to use the legacy of My Chemical Romance to push whatever they want to do in their lives now that actually make them happy.
I could see Warner Brothers, though, being like, yo, you're not allowed to put out another solo album unless you do the MCR thing first, after the way that album performed.
Oh, Gerard released that on Warner Brothers?
Yes.
Oh.
They own Gerard for life.
That's,
for life, fam.
That's kind of funny.
Yeah.
So, we know Gerard at one point this year was working on new solo music, wasn't he? That was in the
Gerard
news cycle or something. And Ray releases a solo song every year. And
I mean, good for Ray. Like, good shouts to Ray.
Shouts to Ray. Electric Century's in the fucking gutter.
Because Mikey Way is a child, and Mikey Way doesn't know how to run a band. And we all know that. Mikey Way should be playing bass in My Chemical Romance. He shouldn't be running a band. That's why Electric Century never happened. You know, we gave them the cover at AP for 100 Bands You Need to Know, and that was a big fucking mistake. I feel like we shouldn't have did that because, obviously, the band went nowhere.
Electric Century has never mattered. Frank Iero's still, he is trying. Like, I think we got to give that dude some props.
You got to give him props for just doing the band thing.
He is hustling,
know?
Man.
Yeah, he's hustling. He's, like, driving around in a van, doing the band thing. And he's actually a really nice guy. I've met Frank. And I'd say he's easily the nicest member of the band. But how funny would it be if they did reunite? And they just did a Danger Days front to back.
Oh, God.
As if, like, a fuck you to, like, for not accepting the album.
I think people would riot, man.
I don't know. Like, here, you get us back, but on our terms.
People just be chucking things at them.
People be chucking things.
We want the Black Parade, man. We want Three Cheers. I just want a Leathermouth reunion, man.
I mean,
can we get Frank,
like,
to do that?
Just do it, MCR. Just do it.
Just like, see, there's that entitlement, though. That's the entitlement that I'm talking about. They don't owe us shit, man.
It's the final Warped Tour. It's a good idea. Do it.
It's a good idea. That's your reason.
It's a good idea. Like, do it. If you want that to be your last show, I think they should do it. I don't know.
Do one date?
No, not one day. I think
you want them to do the entire fucking tour.
Yeah, because they came up with it, you know, 04, 05.
Yeah, but so did 100 other bands.
But, like, they, you know, MCR blew up, and it was a very special time, and they're very linked to Warped Tour. And I don't know. I guess I agree with the crazy fans. And
My Chemical Romance don't owe us anything. Stop asking them to reunite.
I don't think they owe us anything. I just, yeah. Here's my thing. I think they're going to reunite at some point in the future, but we should probably just chill out and wait for it. Like, we don't need all these petitions. That's kind of the point here.
When the hell are My Chemical Romance going to reunite? In, like, fucking 2020?
Maybe.
Those dudes are going to be... Gerard's going to be, like, 45.
Man, so?
I just don't see him marching around to the Black Parade, man.
My man's not gonna have, you know, the shaved bleach head again, you know, wearing the fucking drummer boy uniform, but they're gonna do it at some point. There's just no way they don't.
I just don't see it. I think this band is supposed to go down, and they already did. They were supposed to burn out, not fade away.
Oh, man.
Let this band live in legacy.
No, man. We don't need to build... It's a tough one. You know me, I've lost... I had an argument for this that I'm not allowed to use anymore. Mm-hmm. So it's tough. But I don't think we need to build a stone monument around this band and bury them in a tomb. If they want to come back, if they want to make a new album, if they want to do a tour, I think they can. I think they should.
If they want to, they certainly can.
I think, you know, we're starting to see, you know, the members hang out again and shit. I think we will get to a place where they want to again, and I think we'll see it.
The funniest part is that
I think that's okay. I don't think we need to bury. I don't think we need to mummify them like Tyler Sharp wants to and put them in King Tut's tomb. You know, the legacy of King Tut. You know,
listen,
bury them beneath the great pyramid of Giza.
If they want to come back, if they genuinely want to come back and play My Chemical Romance songs again, more power to them. I just don't think it's ever gonna happen. And the funniest part is that My Chemical Romance aren't on either of ours, like, top 10 favorite bands lists of all time.
No.
we think they're a pretty, like, not necessarily mediocre band, but they're definitely not as special as everyone, you know.
They are a very good band.
Sure.
And they were one of the most impactful. You know, they're almost like, you know, it's
the
like they're a president. They're a presidential figure. They're a former president. They're, right. You know, it's like they're the Barack Obama of the scene. Like...
musically, let's be honest here.
You be careful. Yeah, you're not getting me in trouble, man. I'm not I'm sweating,
I'm
man.
Saying,
I'm just saying. I like a lot of MCR songs, and I think Danger Days is the fucking killer album. There's some filler on those there's some filler on Black Parade and Revenge.
There's some filler on every My Chemical Romance album, that's for sure.
Except Danger Days. Okay, let's move on to our next story, which is Panic at the Disco. Panic at the Disco announced a live album. Can I just say something, Tyler Sharp? Fuck live albums. Do you
Come
give
on,
a shit?
Man. Come on.
Do you care?
I don't really care.
Does anybody care? Who does anybody want live albums in a time when you can, you know, see a band whenever, you can see all their performances on YouTube, you can watch all their SNL performances, you can watch all their late night TV performances, there's HD video every day of Panic at the Disco from this tour. Like, I don't know. What's the point of a live album? Do they matter?
It's time to make some money, man. That's what it comes down to.
Right. It's obviously a cash grab. It's time to make some money, but it's not gonna sell a lot, right? So it's like, it's not even a good cash grab. Correct me if I'm wrong. I mean, do you think this is something Panic at the Disco fans are gonna buy?
I mean, I could see it doing like 10,000 first week, somewhere around there. I mean, you gotta think the album itself did 169,000 pure first week.
Right, so how much do you think they'll sell this for? $12?
Somewhere around there, sure.
So what, so they're gonna make 120 grand off this album, you know? And then it's gonna fall off the charts? I mean, they make a couple hundred thousand off the record, you
right,
know?
Right, right. I think this comes down to filling a void in the cycle. We had a panicless summer.
Right.
That's because Brendan spent it all on Broadway with Kinky Boots, and he did his little acting solo thing, and we haven't had Panic since the arena tour, which obviously was a massive deal, and shouts to them and shouts to Brendan for growing this thing so big. But we haven't had Panic in what, 8 months now?
This
is just filling a void until we get actual stuff that matters from Panic.
It's interesting that you point out the cycle. I think you're very right. This is just that point of the cycle where the band have been gone too long. Alert, we need to throw some form of content out there so people remember this band. Coming off the last record, Death of a Bachelor sold over 700,000 copies. You know, when you include streaming, it's certified platinum.
Mm-hmm.
You know, they played stadiums. It's incredible. I mean, they're the biggest they've ever been as a band. I mean, arguably, compared to the Fever era, it's a toss-up. But they're one of the biggest bands out there right now. And, you know, they've had so much success. It's like, at what point in the cycle do we think they are at right now, coming off all that? Like, we've waited 8 months now. Are they ready to record again? Like...
I have not heard anything, so this is pure speculation. But if I had to guess, I think we will get at least a single in 2018, a new Panic at the Disco single. Because if you remember back on the last cycle, they released Hallelujah like 6 months before the album was ever even announced. So I think that's kind of what it's going to come down to.
Oh,
I
yeah,
don't think we'll get
true.
The album until 2019, but I think we might get a single or two in 2018.
It's so interesting when you think of the success Death of a Bachelor has had, because you go back and Too Weird to Live was a big success for them.
Right.
And that album only went gold and it sold like in the high 400,000s. And then you go back even further, Vices, that only sold over 200,000 copies and wasn't that big of a success, had like no radio singles. And so we've really watched this band just claw their way back from the disaster of Pretty Odd. Have you ever seen a band's trajectory like this, where, you know, they were huge, then down, and have just kind of album by album clawed their way back up to the top? I can't think of another example.
Well, it's so interesting to compare them to Fall Out Boy. Them and Fall Out Boy came up together, kind of. Pete Wentz took Brendan under his wing, and Brendan has always
absolutely
kind of been under Pete's wing his entire career.
Absolutely came up. You know, Panic were signed to Pete's label.
Right, absolutely.
They came up together.
So they both kind of went away. We didn't have Panic and Fall Out Boy for a few years. Fall Out Boy came back with Save Rock and Roll, My Songs Know What You Did in the Dark, and Panic kind of came back out of nowhere with Miss Jackson and Too Weird to Live. And these albums were definitely different, but the aesthetic of how they both came back and how they treated their music moving forward is very similar. And
oh, yeah, no.
It worked.
Panic,
like, it was a system. It worked.
Yeah. Panic absolutely copied Fall Out Boy.
Right.
And they're both managed by the same management company. Mm-hmm. It's intentional, same label. It's Panic, you know, Miss Jackson was their My Songs Know What You Did in the Dark. Both the songs are very fucking similar sonically, too.
Absolutely.
When you actually break them down.
Absolutely. But what it comes down to now is that Panic is kind of gaining ground on Fall Out Boy in a sense.
Yeah.
And
well, I mean,
when we look at Mania compared to how, you know, Death of a Bachelor did, it's kind of not even close at this point. But we'll
definitely
have to see
not
how Mania does. But it just looks like Panic is almost becoming bigger than Fall Out Boy. And it's kind of time to pose that question. Will Panic outrun Fall Out Boy within the next 2 years?
Yeah, it's certainly a possibility, because Panic are, you know, doing very well. And Mania is to be seen. But I don't know. You know, I think if you put, it's not fair to put Death of a Bachelor up to Mania. You kind of have to put Death of a Bachelor up to American
next.
Beauty, American Psycho.
Okay. Okay.
And that, which album was more successful? American Beauty.
Right.
Yeah. You know,
kind of
by far. So Fall Out Boy still hold the belt, but
sure,
you're right. There's a possibility there for a usurping to happen. Did you see this? Pete and Brendan in an interview with Pop Buzz offhandedly kind of mentioned doing a project together.
So I did. And we literally have an episode of this show called What Are Panic at the Disco, or What Are Fall Out Boy and Brendan Urie Plotting? Because for a second, it looked like Brendan was going to be on Mania. And then Mania got scrapped, whatever, delayed. We don't know what happened to those songs. All of them, they could be using more ideas from the old ones, whatever. They released a track list into Mania, and Brendan isn't listed as a feature on any of the songs, while there is another artist who's listed. So did whatever they do together just kind of get evolved into a Pete and Brendan project, or did they ever do anything together? We just don't know at this point.
Yeah, very interesting interview with Pop Buzz. Shouts to all our friends at Pop Buzz. But I mean, like, what would this even sound like? You know, it's funny to think of these two doing a project together, because not everybody remembers this, but back when Panic were first getting put on, there was a conspiracy theory that it was Patrick singing, because Brendan and Patrick sounded so similar, and you know, their voices have changed a lot since then. But when you go back and listen to that early stuff, they were hitting a lot of the same notes, and they had a very similar style of singing. And there were, like, legit, I had friends tell me, no, it is the Fall Out Boy guy singing for Panic at the Disco. And it's hard, you know, this is before Twitter, this is before Instagram, and there were a lot of people who actually believed that Fall Out Boy and Panic had the same singer for a few months,
was
a really funny time in the scene.
That's so funny. And no one, most people don't remember this, but they played as the Decadence All-Stars on the Warped Tour DVD in like 2009 or 2010.
So random.
And they covered Blink-182, and it was just Brendan and Pete and like a couple other guys on stage, but it was literally Brendan and Pete, so they've always been intertwined with one another, so it kind of makes sense that they would do something. I just don't know how much, like, would this matter? It would obviously matter, but would it be like a commercial push from a major label? I don't know.
Yeah, that's why it would just make sense, like you said, as a feature. Like, just do the fucking feature song. Get it over with. I was driving today, and I slept with someone in Fall Out Boy. Came up on my Spotify shuffle.
Ooh,
oh my God.
It back,
so fun.
Man.
I cranked it. Dude, the lyric, "I am sorry my conscience called in sick again." Love it so much.
Classic Fall Out Boy.
We gotta move on, though, to our next story, which is Linkin Park. So, Avenged Sevenfold singer M. Shadows, interestingly, said that Linkin Park have, quote, every right to continue as a band without Chester. I'm going to read M. Shadows' quote he gave during this interview. He said, "They're human beings, and they have a long life to live. And I think if they love music this much, they have every right to move forward. Knowing Mike Shinoda as well as I do, he's always been, in my opinion, the leader of the band. He's the guy who gets things going, the guy who gets demos going, the guy who obsesses over every detail of the band." So what's your takeaway from this, Tyler Sharp? You know, M. Shadows kind of coming out and saying this band should continue.
He's not wrong when he says that Mike is kind of like basically the band's manager, and he's the one who gets the ball rolling. I mean, we've talked about that on the show before Chester passed. Right. It was interesting this week to see their AMA story break. They won that award, but the story was kind of them quote unquote getting kicked out of the AMAs. Mike came out, said shout out to clickbait journalism. Props to my man Brian Storm for breaking that story, because it actually was a story. But it was kind of the first time they'd been in the media cycle with something that didn't have to do with Chester. And it made it feel like Linkin Park was still just a band.
Right.
So I can totally see this band moving forward. I don't think M. Shadows is like out of line here by any means. He's just commenting on what, you know, a question that he was asked about Linkin Park. And we talked about this when we talked about the tribute show, and Mike played a quote unquote new song from the band. I could totally see it happening. And I think if I had to give my guess, I think Mike has every intention of moving forward with Linkin Park.
Yeah. So here's my first question here. You know, we know M. Shadows and Linkin Park are very close, those two camps, you know, and they have been for a long time. And Mike, you know, and M. Shadows are very good friends. Is this the band putting out a feeler through M. Shadows? Like, that was my first suspicion, is that, like, this is something the band wanted to say, but they just kind of had M. Shadows say it just to get it out there and gauge everyone's reaction, you know, because we know how tight they are.
For sure. But I don't know.
It seems possible.
It's totally possible, but I felt like, I don't want to say this was genuine.
And here you go. Like, Liz, when asked if the band would end it, Shadows said, quote, "I don't think it's possible, and I think it would be a shame if he did."
It's very definitive words.
Yeah, like, he's coming out like he knows something. You know what I mean?
Do you think that he knows something? And
he's speaking very confidently. I don't know. I think this could be the band putting out a feeler. You know, just in the same way that they tested that first song at the Chester show. But in the aftermath of Chester's death, like, it's interesting to think back to that, because in the direct aftermath, I thought the band was over. You know, I was like, that's it. Linkin Park's done.
Right.
They're gone. You know, but now, after that tribute show, as time has passed, I'm like more open to the idea now. And I wouldn't particularly mind the band continuing at all.
As long as he doesn't make it sound like Fort Minor, I'm good with it. I'm good with them moving on just with Mike. I think they can do it.
Because you got to think, this band is still a very successful enterprise, too. Like, the last album was really successful. I think it's sold around 240,000 copies when you don't factor in streaming, you know, and it's probably going to go gold at some point. Heavy was a huge pop hit. They're a successful enterprise still, and it makes sense for them to continue forward. But, like, I got to say, it's going to be weird to hear that first album without Chester.
Absolutely.
Like, there's just no getting around it. I want the band to do what they want to do, but it's definitely going to be weird to hear that.
It's kind of an unprecedented world. We don't really know. Yeah. You know, Stone Temple Pilots got a new vocalist. They just announced that like last week. So it wouldn't be the first time that a band has moved on with a new vocalist after their original one had passed. But at the level of Linkin Park, it's kind of unprecedented. So,
and Shadows does have a point that Shinoda really is he's like not the show, you know, you have showrunners for TV shows. Shinoda is like the band runner for this band. You know, he does it all. He's the architect of it. You know, I think Han doesn't get enough credit for what he does, but it's mostly Shinoda and Han. And, you know, Chester would get distracted and go do Stone Temple Pilots, for example. You know what I mean?
Right.
And Mike's kind of the guy who would reel it in. But also cool that they won that AMA because they beat out Imagine Dragons and 21 Pilots.
Oh,
like,
thank God.
Not,
I didn't even know they knew. I didn't even know that.
Yeah, they won for Best Alternative Rock Artists, and Imagine Dragons, who are like tearing up the charts, and 21 Pilots, like those are two big dragons to slay. So shouts to the band for that,
for sure. Definitely.
Let's move on to our pop story this week, which is Black Bear. Black Bear is releasing his new album Cyber Sex on Cyber Monday, and Black Bear is kind of an interesting musician to talk about. You know, like, he's one of these guys, he's like a singer rapper,
mm-hmm.
I'd say, Tyler.
Mm-hmm.
And he's, you know, you don't want to call him R&B because that makes it sound kind of boring, but like, he's like new R&B, you know, like he's very like SoundCloud underground influenced, you know, he's very hip hop. He sort of wears hip hop as a costume. He's a big personality. And the one thing I'd say he's really good at is melody. And he's one of these guys, he's like, he's produced for a very long time behind the scenes. He's one of these producer guys, and now that he's finally getting his moment to be the star, he's produced for everyone from Linkin Park and Nick Jonas to, he produced some songs on Tyler Carter of Issues' solo album.
Oh, man, I didn't know that.
He's been all over the place. I mean, he's been in the industry working forever. The first big song he produced, which shocked me when I heard it, was Justin Bieber's Boyfriend.
He wrote.
Mm-hmm. Sorry, if I've said he's produced some of these songs, he might have written them or co-wrote them. But he's also, him and Mike Posner have been homies for a long time and have been working together.
It's interesting that we're doing this as the pop story to me, because he has scene connections. Like you just said, he has worked with Tyler Carter in some capacity before. But right now, he's on tour with Fall Out Boy. He's opening their Mania tour. So he's involved in that world, and he's very much aware of the scene and a lot of our artists. So I think that's really cool.
He just has an interesting hype around him that's undeniable. You know, like, there's 10 million Spotify listeners. You know, like, he's the most exciting pop story this week. You know, despite all of these bigger acts like Demi Lovato and people doing things, there's this tangible hype around Black Bear. And I don't know where it came from. It was just like 2017, all of a sudden Black Bear was cool as fuck. Like, what?
Right. I just think these songs are interesting in their own world. Like, there's just not, like you said, he's kind of like this SoundCloud rap meets R&B meets EDM kind of dude. And like, it's kind of like when we talk about Lil Peep, how different and how genre bending his songs were. Blackboard's kind of in that same lane, and it's really interesting to talk about.
Yeah, it is. All of those things you said, and then you combine it with a great sense of melody and a really unique voice. Mm-hmm. Like, I've just, you never heard a singer like him. And he also wears this gangster, super successful costume, you know? Like, it's not like he's fronting, right? When he says he gets off a private jet and he has security guards with him.
Right.
He's like, he's having fun with it. He's playing theater. You know, he knows he's not that rich and that successful yet. But, like, he sings like he is on the song, on the album. We haven't heard the whole album yet, or at least I haven't. Have you?
No, I have not.
But
only
he's
the singles.
Dropped so many singles that, like, we've at least heard more than half of it. I mean, what's your takeaway so far?
Yeah, so my favorite songs thus far are kind of his more low-key bangers. My favorite song right now is Anxiety. I mean, straight up banger nation. It's time to stand up. That song is great. Absolutely awesome. And it's probably his most Justin Bieber Diplo EDM-y track that we've heard so far. But
absolutely.
His like sultry
voice. You got the chipmunk EDM bump going on there in the chorus.
Totally. And maybe I'm a little biased to that sound right now. But
hey, man, love that sound. I hit that hard. I'm doing lines of that sound all day. Like,
it's so good, dude. It's so good. And I love the closer on the album that he put out, Santa Monica and La Brea. It's a great low-key song. It's just a good, it almost feels like the Postal Service at some moment. It's such low-key techno-y kind of stuff, and it's not necessarily EDM. So I loved that vibe. I really came around on the Tinashe song Up in This. Her parts make that entire song. And then the dichotomy between her and his, like, he's got a very sultry voice. It's almost like soulful at some point.
It's very swag.
Yeah.
Is how I would describe it. It's like swag core. Like, the amount of swag in that voice, like, the swag meter is breaking.
Right.
I don't know how he has so much swag. and that voice. He's just like, you know, he's just like a skinny white dude with pink hair.
Right,
where does
right.
you know like the swag come from? I don't get it, but he's
right.
got it. My favorite songs are Santa Monica Up in This, which is the Tinashe feature, Playboy Shit, which features Lil Aaron,
my boy,
and Got to Go, Talk to You Later, and Anxiety. I guess I like all the songs that have come out so far.
Right,
apparently.
Dude.
I guess I'm about this, but yeah, like Playboy Shit is a song that makes me feel really good when I hear it. It's a really good party jam. I can see it bumping at like college parties, you know, this whole fall semester.
It really reminds me of Escalade, the song that Lil Aaron and Black Bear did before this album earlier this year.
It could definitely be bumping. You'll hear it bumping at frat houses. You
know
what I mean? It's that kind of party jam. Up in This with Tinashe, I really love Tinashe. She's super underrated R&B singer. She's great. She's a good mix, and I actually really like Black Bear's parts on Up in This. Like, there's a sense of urgency to his singing,
right?
You know, it's great. It feels very of the moment. I like the color palette going on with this album.
Do you?
And his look. His hair is pastel pink. The album cover is pastel pink, but it's not like a shiny pink. It's like a chalky pink.
Sure.
Do you know what I'm saying?
Yep.
It's just an interesting look I haven't seen before from an artist, and I really like it. I like the whole color palette going around this release.
Totally. You mentioned Gotta Go, Talk to You Later. That song is really interesting to me because it starts off with like the bass of the song is this acoustic guitar that sounds like he just rips it from a Jack Johnson song, but the dichotomy of Black Bear himself in the atmosphere in that world is so intriguing, and he totally pulls it off. I really like that song.
He is his own instrument, you know what I mean?
Basically,
his voice, it's
yeah.
his own fucking thing. It's not just a Jack Johnson song because it's Black Bear's thing. His voice is like this electronic element. But we gotta move on, Tyler.
All right,
and we gotta talk about I Prevail, who released a new music video for Already Dead from their wildly successful album, Lifelines. Shouts to Fearless Records, counting that radio rock money. This video sees the band take over an old, fat, troll guy's computer screen. I guess this is kind of the band are venting some anger at all the hate they get online. That's kind of what I took away from the video.
Yeah, like they've never been one to shy away from their haters. Their vocalist likes to release these long statements about how defending the way they came up with their viral videos and all this stuff, and how and he's not wrong. He is completely legit how I Prevail did it. They found a system that worked to get their music in front of people, and I think it's honestly quite hilarious to see bands like Bless the Fall hate on I Prevail because of the way they got big. I think that's so funny because Bless the Fall is just fading into irrelevancy at this point. But this video is just whatever. Scene Kid, the old guy that you mentioned, he's from Tenacious D. Scene Kids don't give a shit about Tenacious D, and probably most of them don't even know what that is or
at this point, right?
Yeah,
for sure.
And this song is like Gideon and Wage War have both already written this song before. This is a heavier I Prevail song, and it could fall in line with either of those bands easily. So this was kind of a whatever experience for me. What about you?
I was just, you know, like, yeah, like everything you said, you know, the band are having success, fuck Bless the Fall, but like, wow, they are a bad band. Like, you know, they're just not good at music.
Oh,
and
God.
On the entire album, like this song might be like, to me, this feels like their most blatant attempt at like Walmart, A Day to Remember. You know, it's just so like the heavier side of A Day to Remember. It's just so fucking watered down. Like, if this is the 90s and A Day to Remember are Backstreet Boys or NSYNC, then, like, I Prevail or 98 Degrees or O-Town. You know, or the Baby When the Lights Go Out band. Like, that's how I see it. You know what I mean? They're just a fucking knockoff. And they're not good. They're not even good at being a knockoff. But, as I say this, Lifelines has officially sold over 100,000 copies. Not only was Alone a top 5 rock radio success, but their title track from that album is now climbing radio. It's at number 27. It's happening, and we should be happy for them.
Yes, we should definitely be happy for them. But it's hard. It is hard.
It's hard.
Because they do the bare minimum. That's what these songs are.
Right.
The bare
minimum.
It's hard.
It's easy to be happy for them when I don't have to listen to the music. But when we have to dive into it like this, it's like, ooh, it's hard to be happy for you when you're this bad.
Sure.
Because they really are bad.
Yeah. These songs are the bare minimum of what it takes to get people's attention. And when your main traffic comes from the attention of strangers, from viral momentum on Facebook, it makes sense. that this is what people are going to gravitate towards because it's so forgettable and it's so bottom line that it's so, going to grab the attention of the casual listener. And
this song is like a 5 out of 10 for me. It's so bad to me. Like, this makes Alone sound like Welcome to the Fucking Black Parade or something. You know what I mean? Like, that's how bad this song is to me. How about you?
Yeah, I'm at like a 4, 4.5, somewhere in between there. It's I've already heard this song before, and all it was more fun when Gideon and Wage Ward did it first.
Let's move on to our next story, which is Waterpark singer Austin Knight released a solo song called Worst. Have you had a chance to listen to this song, Tyler
Sharp? I have, and I have a question to that. Do we know for sure if this is a solo song?
Well, what's interesting is that he's on the cover of AP right now.
Right.
As a solo artist, or the upcoming issue of AP, which that actually looks really cool. I'm going to have to cop that for sure.
Definitely. Props.
AP is doing their whole new rollout. They totally upgraded the magazine. It's like a new, thick, nice, glossy experience. It looks really cool. But he's on the cover of that as a solo artist, not as Waterparks. So for AP to be relaunching their magazine with him as a solo artist on the cover, I think we're getting strong solo signals, which is weird, you know, from Waterpark's perspective.
Right now, especially because they're rolling out their new album. I just thought I got weird vibes from all of this. So I did a little dive. I didn't dive totally deep, so I may be missing a few things. Basically, he tweeted out a link to this song, deleted the tweet after, like, really quickly. Basically, what I've been able to gather is it's about his ex, and I guess that was a pretty, you know, relationship went down pretty hard. The song itself is better than any Waterpark song I've ever heard, and it's just a few 808s away from being a Black Bear song. I think that in the future, you know, when Waterparks inevitably falls, I think Austin could have a career as this solo SoundCloud-y R&B type singer, just like Black Bear. Could you not see that? Like, doesn't that make more sense for Austin than Waterparks does?
I don't think his voice is good enough for that. I think he's more of an Alex Gaskarth where he needs a band to hide behind, you know, vocally.
So you don't like the song?
I don't like the song. I wanted to. I really wanted to. Because, you know, we're just coming off. We both liked that new Waterpark single.
We did.
What's that called? What's it called again?
Blonde.
Like, Blonde, yeah. We both liked that. And I was pretty stoked on it. And I was like a little stoked for Waterparks for the first time ever. So I wanted to like this. But I didn't. Yeah, I thought it was bad. I'm at like a 4 out of 10 on it. It's just so weird to think, is there a serious solo plan here? Like, Waterparks as a band haven't even really happened yet, you know? They've been premature on everything. They haven't really sold any records. They don't get a lot of streams. They're not that big yet, but, they get all the press attention in the world. They're on the cover of every magazine. We're already going to start this solo bullshit, like, before the band's even established? It's just so confusing.
I almost wonder if Austin was home at his parents' house over a holiday weekend and got bored and tweeted this out and didn't really realize what it was going to mean. That's always in the back of my mind, but at the same rate, I'm always the cynical music industry asshole who says this is calculated.
Right.
This is
with the Madden brothers managing him and controlling his every move from the time this band stepped onto the scene.
Right.
You know?
Right.
Everything with this band, you know, has been so calculated.
But there's a part of me where I could see that he was bored at his parents' house over the weekend. It was just like, well, I'm thinking about my ex. Here's this song that says some mean things.
I like how Waterparks is where Tyler Sharp finds his optimism somehow.
Let's move
on to our next story, which is Suicide Silence. Suicide Silence announced a special show package where you can pay $150 to be their roadie for a day. This has not been received well, and the metal world is having their own little Kellen Quinn Polaroid gate. So basically, you can pay the band to work for them for a day, has been the narrative. Right, Tyler? I mean, that's kind of what everyone's
what it is.
About.
That's exactly what it is. And fuck this band, man.
Oh, man.
Can you just say, like, this? They can't stop doing stupid things in 2017. I don't understand it. What the hell were they thinking?
Okay.
You can pay us so you can work for us. And we'll give you a fucking t-shirt. And it's going to say, get the fuck out of my way. In super edgy font. Fuck this band, man. I'm done with Suicide Silence. It's I'm just I need them to go away because that's they need to at this point. This is fucking ridiculous.
You are still so mad about that last album. I can hear it in your voice. Okay, all right. I have in all cap locks in my notes, come to the band's defense. Like, I was feeling really... I was feeling really strongly about this yesterday, I guess. Okay, so, all right, first off, let's go through what this package actually is. It includes work alongside the crew during load-in. Next one, stand side stage for Suicide Silence's set. Enjoy a pre-show meal with the crew. Mingle with the band during soundcheck. Exclusive t-shirt. Working crew laminate. This, to me, doesn't sound like a Jackass thing to do at all. I don't think the band are under any illusion that you're going to be helping their crews, like, so much, and they're, like, going to be making free labor off you. You're getting a pretty decent... Think about it. Like, if you're a fan of this band, you're getting a pretty decent experience. You know, you get to hang out with their crew, check out their gear. You get to watch the band during soundcheck. You get to eat with the band. You get a t-shirt. You get a laminate. I don't know. I mean, I don't know if it's worth 100. It seems to me like if you're a big fan, 150 bucks, this is a pretty special kind of concert experience. Like, it's not like they're just like, hey, come work for us. You know, I think the metal blogs really just blew this one out of proportion. Like, shame on you guys. Like, shame on Metal Injection, PRP, and Lambgoat. I don't think this is, like, as bad as the narrative, you know, is casting it out to be.
I have so many things to say to that. First off, the meal that they're talking about is fucking covered. They're not paying for that. They're getting that food. Right. Have you ever stood side stage at a show? It sounds like shit because yes, you're not in front of the fucking speakers. Congratulations. You feel validated when you're side stage at a show.
Exactly.
That's bullshit.
Listen, that's fun for fans. Don't even try to front. I've stood side stage for many bands just, you know, because I wanted to, because it's fun. It's a fun experience.
It's masked as a fun experience.
Most people want it.
I would say no. Most kids that listen to heavy music like this want to be in the pit. They want to be out in the crowd.
If you could be... All right.
They work alongside the crew. What if some kid's lifting something and gets fucking hurt?
Dude, they're not even going to be really doing work. Like, you're going to be... The crew's not even going to want you in their way.
There's literally listed on here, mingle with the band during sound check.
That sounds dope.
What, this? All right. None of this makes any sense to me, and it's the there's a reason why this has never been done before. This is a contest. You have a contest, this is what you win. You don't pay $150 fucking dollars to quote-unquote hang out with a band for a night. That's bullshit.
This just seems to me like a VIP experience. Masked in an interesting way. That's all it is. And I think it got blown out of proportion, really. Like, you're getting to hang out with the band, you're getting the fucking t-shirt, you're getting a laminate, you're even getting to eat with them. It's just, that's all it is. It's a VIP experience.
You get a laminate.
Here's that's part of a VIP experience. Dollars, we did that at the APMAs. We gave laminates to our VIP people. Like, that's part of, I mean, 150 bucks, show ticket, add all this stuff up. You know, I mean, maybe it's a little overpriced and that's what you can ding them on. But to me, it's just the VIP experience. It's not like I don't think they're trying to use anyone for like free labor. I really don't think they're under the impression they're going to save money by having their fans load all their equipment. You know,
they're not saving money. They're making money.
You think they're
it's $150, man.
Man,
how much
I'm
is
having...
a fucking Suicide Silent ticket? I wouldn't pay more than $5 to go see this band.
They're more than $5.
And that's sure. Fucking ridiculous. What, so $15 to $20 to go see Suicide Silence? Oh, here's $150. So
I'm
I
getting
just war go
flashbacks.
Hang out backstage.
I'm getting war flashbacks to Polaroid Gate now. From
I wish it was so like, much bigger. Oh, shouts to Brendan from Counterparts for calling this bro out on Twitter.
Oh my god. I'm having Vietnam. Like, I'm seeing the helicopters and the napalm man to Polaroid Gate. Like,
I wish it would have been more of a big deal.
For those who don't remember, Polaroid Gate, Sleeping with Sirens announced a special Polaroid photo package where you could take a picture with Kellen Quinn for $80. And the narrative quickly became that Kellen wants $80 for you to take a picture with him. And shit got wild. The entire scene, including fans and musicians like Ali Sykes, turned on the band. And it was crazy.
Pretty much every band you could ever imagine that was existing in the scene at that point called out Kellen, including Ali Sykes. That was the biggest one.
It's up there, right? In the, like, as far as scene controversies go, like,
of
it's,
scene controversies,
it's in the top five, right? I mean, like, it was all anyone talked about. for a week.
If you just Google Pupfresh Kellen Quinn Polaroid, they have screenshots of every tweet from every band member in a post, and it's still live.
Yeah, you can just Google Polaroid. The word has just
Polaroid.
Now fucking synonymous. Like, anytime you bring it up, people laugh. But, you know, again, like, Kellen, you know.
Oh, here we go. He's going to defend Polaroid Gate. He's going to defend
the narrative. Right. I'm going to defend Polaroid Gate. The narrative, Kellen wants $80 to take a fucking picture with him. But when you actually looked at what the package was, this is what your $80 was getting you. An autographed Polaroid photo with Kellen. So you get to take a picture with Kellen. It's printed on Polaroid paper, which is more expensive, you know, than a digital photo.
Ooh.
And it's autographed by him. A group Q&A session with Kellen was included. A singing session with Sleeping with Sirens was included. A large double-sided autographed poster was included. Early entry to their Fearless tour was included, as well as a general admission ticket to the Fearless tour. So when you add all that up, $80 is really fucking reasonable for all that. That is not a bad deal at all. It's just, you see how quickly the narrative can become. The narrative can become that Kellen wants $80 for you to snap a picture with him. And the narrative runs away from what's actually going on. It's not actually that bad.
I just don't agree with it. And I don't want to be the main here and be like...
But, like, I'm not saying you don't agree with it, but if it's not for you to disagree or agree with. If you were one of those people who wanted to meet Kellen, you got to agree that, like, that's not a bad deal. All that shit you're getting for $80?
I think it's wrong. I will say that...
You're against the concept in general of meeting, of this whole... thing. You don't think people should pay to meet musicians.
And I think that Kellen's ordeal and the Suicide Silence ordeal are two completely different things. You and I have talked about off the show how kind of blown out of proportion the Kellen thing was because of the angle. This is wrong. This is totally different. They branded this thing. The whole angle is working for the band. That's the first bullet point. Right. Work alongside the crew. And you get a shirt that says, Sue a Crew. And on the back it says, get the fuck out of my way. You're a security person. That's what this is. And if you want to pay $150 to go do it, what the fuck ever, man. But you're wasting
your
money.
It's certainly an experience you could have with the band. I mean, maybe. If you've got the cash to burn and you're a super fan, it sounds like to me it'd be more fun than just going to the show.
Are there any Suicide Silence super fans left?
I know you feel that way, Tyler, because you're so upset about the last album, but I bet you there are.
I don't think this is good. This is not good.
I don't think it's good either. I'm just saying my whole point is shame on the metal blogs, because just like the Kellen Quinn narrative got away.
You and I would have run this story.
We would have run it, but it's just...
See, now you're a hypocrite. We would have run this story.
We would have run this story, but not in the same way the metal blogs did. Like, we would
have
presented factual journalism, and we would have showed, look at all this stuff you actually get. It's not... The way the blogs made it sound is, oh, you pay the band and just be their roadie. They didn't mention, you know, you actually get all this shit and you actually get to spend time with the band.
What do you
get?
Which
some people want.
Of course, you're gonna be a roadie.
You get a laminate and you get to hang out with the band during sound check, bro.
If you're gonna be a quote unquote roadie for a band, you're obviously gonna meet them and hang out with them for a little bit. That's a given.
Side stage for the show.
In the headline, pay Suicide Silence $150 and you can be their roadie for one show. That's Lambgoat's headline. That's literally what the fuck this is. What do you want them to say? You get a t-shirt in the headline too?
It's a fan experience.
No, it is not.
It's a fan experience. You're not really a fucking roadie.
It is a blatant cash grab from a washed
up metal band. Legal reasons and more reasons. You're not their roadie. It's a fan experience branded as roadie, because in the metal world, roadie sounds cool. That's all it is.
The music industry is complete bullshit, and this is a failing band grabbing its straws to make some money.
I don't think it's that bad, but I gotta read the back to Polaroid Gate. I gotta read the Ollie Sykes call out, because oh my god. So after the whole Kellen Quinn thing happens, Ollie tweets. Next USA tour, Ollie Sykes, special Polaroid package. Take a photo with me. Special price. Absolutely no charge at all. Fucking cockstars. The tweet, like, to go down in infamy of all tweets, of all scenes. That's probably the most retweeted scene tweet ever, I think.
Whoever writes the book, that tweet's going to get its own page.
Right? Just like a full spread of it?
Yep.
Just picture of that tweet. It's got to be the most retweeted scene tweet of all time. Like... fucking cockstars has now just become another synonymous thing, you know? I didn't know what a cock star was before Ali did that.
Could you believe when he got a tattoo of the feather, of the feel feather on his face? I couldn't That's believe great. That. I was like, really? We're going to take this far? I was all for a sleeping bring me beef. But then they ironed it out within a few days.
Yeah, they did. They cleaned. Ali tweeted, like, you know, I didn't mean any hate. But, like, it was just, he took the pulse of the moment. And the pulse of the moment was that Kellen wants $80 for you to take a selfie with him, you know? And
imagine
he
if he
it
tweeted
out.
It now, man. Bring me is right. just so outgrown sleeping by leaves.
Right, and now you look at it, Ali, it's funny because Ali's become the cock star. You know, Ali, you want to take a picture with Ali, you're paying $1,000. You know what I mean? Like, he's not taking a fucking picture with you. Like,
yeah, man.
It's so funny how the tables have turned. Kellen's way more fan-oriented.
Because
as
he has
was
to be.
With this, as he was with this generous $80 package.
Yeah, yeah, you should be praising him. But he has to be now. He doesn't have a choice. He has to hold on to whatever fans are left.
I wasn't being sarcastic, by the way. I do believe that this was a generous $80 package.
Agree to disagree, my friend. We can go back and forth all day, and I'll totally do it.
No, by the way, special noticing bonus episode coming in the future at some point, just on Polaroid Gate.
Absolutely.
We're going to do a whole Polaroid Gate episode at some point.
It's gotta happen. Every tweet, it's coming out.
It's coming out. We'll do the tweet. I want to do the oral history of Polaroid Gate. I want to get band members involved, but I think this podcast has officially derailed, Tyler Sharp.
I think so. I think we unfortunately have to wrap this up.
Yes. Thank you so much, everyone, for listening this week. If you enjoy the show, please take the time to rate and review us on iTunes. Just hit that 5-star button and we will love you. If you have any questions, send them in to noteseen@gmail.com and we will happily answer them on the show. All right, see you later.